Opportunity to give a certain amount of shiurim here in the Heights to women, and it's something that I very much enjoy. I'm not sure if other people enjoy it, but I certainly enjoy it. And before I do so, I always want to mention that this is really a community here that's built around YU. So whether or not you went to Stern, you didn't go to Stern, you're still in Stern, you still have some connection with YU, you know, this is really a yeshiva. It's a community. It's a community of people that really care about each other, people who support each other. And to that end, I know most of you here, but for those who I do know, those who I don't know, if myself, any of the other Rebbeim can ever be of any support or help or guidance, that's really what we're here for. We're really here to sort of be part of that, you know, for lack of a better word, that family setting. I also really want to thank Mrs. Kaufman, which is you, not your mother-in-law. I want to thank Jessica and Daniel for opening up their apartment. This is really, just not to embarrass you, but it's very much the culmination of years of growth and a beautiful wedding, and then sort of culminating in having a home, which I'm sure is probably true by all of you, a home of Torah, a home that's a vad for Divrei Torah and for growth, and it's an enormous... you don't have to leave. You don't have to. You know. It's an enormous source of nachas to see you and Daniil over all these years, and finally have a home of Torah and of growth, and that should continue Kein Yirbu in Eretz Yisrael next year, and for many, many years and decades to come. Okay, so I want to speak about a topic that, on the one hand, is very simple. And that, of course, is the topic of chametz and matzah. But what I really love about Yadus is that you might have a child who's, you know, 3 years old or 4 years old. Anybody here a mother? Okay. Yeah, you might have a kid, they come home, and every kid who's 4 years old knows about, you know, chametz and matzah, and they know what they have to do, and they know certain halachos. And then you can have somebody who's 94 years old and learning the same material and reading the same psukim and experiencing the same moments, but they feel that on such a deeper level. I mean, the same halacha, the same mitzvah, the same chetza is something that as we get older, we just infuse it with so much more. We infuse it with so much more meaning. And the chetza, so to speak, the objects of chametz and matzah, it's not just like a maisa mitzvah. It is a maisa mitzvah with shiurim and halachos and rules to it. But it's really much more than that. It's the way in which the Torah tells us that we experience and we conceptualize freedom, chayrus, the experience of Yetzias Yisrael, both on a national level and personal level. So this chetza, far from being a simple object of matzah, far from being a simple object of like an Entenmann's donut, if you like any of his donuts. It's the entire symbol of how we experience the beauty of these incredibly dramatic, profound, meaningful moments, and the depths of which we understand that mitzvah is the depths in which we connect with the profundity and the beauty of these chagim. So I want to speak a little bit about the relation between chametz and matzah. I'm not going to say any real chidushim at all, probably very, very simple ideas, but just to share a couple thoughts in halacha and machshava, and certainly if anybody has any thoughts they want to add to it as well, please let me know. Now, in theory, a person can say that chametz and matzah are two different objects and maybe not so related. You know, we can't eat chametz, but you're not allowed to eat chametz in Pesach, we know that. And a person has to eat matzah. And maybe that's sort of the extent of the connection between these two objects, between chametz and matzah. You can't do one, and you are supposed to do the other. But obviously we know that that's not the case. We know that the connection between the two is not just no to one and yes to the other, but it's something that is deeply, deeply connected on a halachic level and on a hashkafic level. Does anybody know an example of the depth of connection in halacha, so to speak, between chametz and matzah, where we see that the two are very much interrelated and very much interconnected? Anybody? I'm sure people know, but certainly feel free to yell out or venture a guess or look at the first Mar Makom, whatever you want to do. But the Mishnah says the first Mar Makom So Elu Dvarim Sha'adam Yotzi Bahen Yidei Chavasa BePesach. These are the things that a person is Yotzei Bahen Yidei Chavasa BePesach. What does that mean? Yotzei Bahen Chavasa means a person fulfills a Machilas Matzah. Nowadays, by the way, life is much more complicated. It used to be that everyone would eat wheat. And now, all of a sudden, however many years later, this person is gluten-free, and this person only is this, and that person is on this, and this person's on a, Elisa, what are they called? Like a cleanse? I don't even know what these things are. Like, you know, when you have a 22-year-old daughter, they make you crazy, you know? So then, like, okay, what can we make matzah? It used to be like matzah was matzah, and that was it. But now it's, so the things that you can eat matzah from, of course, are chitim, right? Seorim, wheat, barley, kusmin. Anybody know what kusmin is? You know, kusmin is a very popular food nowadays if you want to shop in Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or places like that. So kusmin is spelt. I don't know what spelt is, but it's spelt. Spelt seems like it's a form of wheat, if I'm not mistaken. Ubishifon, anybody know what shifon is? Shifon is like rye. Ubishibolas shual, this is the last one. So wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and shibola shuel, and then the last one, reek matzah, oats. Okay, so these are the five things. And the Gemara then goes on to explain what are sort of the categories of each thing. You know, oats is in the barley category, and rye is in the wheat category, but these are the five things. Now, how do we get to these five things? Why dafka these five things instead of something else? Why can't I make matzah out of, you know, potato grinds? So if you look in the Gemara, you skip down two lines. We know Hadimili, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, V'chein Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, V'chein Tana Devei Rabbi Elezer, Ben Yaakov, Amar Kra, Lo Socha Lav Chametz. You're not allowed to eat chametz. Shivas Yomim Tocha Lav Matzos. Okay, and the connection between the two of chametz and matzah. It's a very famous line. Dvarim Habayim L'Dechimutz Adam Yotzei Behen Yidechovaso. Right, b'matzah. Okay, anything that can come. What does it mean? Habayim l'dechimutz. How would you define those words? Anything that can become chametz, right? Then a person adam yotze b'hen dechavasu b'matzah. So only by taking the ingredients or the objects that one could have made into chametz, those are the things that you can eat for matzah. Again, so matzah in a way is almost a rejection of chametz. It's a transformation of chametz, as opposed to being sort of two different objects. Okay, everyone follow that? Fine. The next mar makom, also very similar. Question is, how do we know that a woman, if I will throw out the question, imagine this is a very, very educated audience, but why is a woman chayiv in matzah if it's a mitzvah asei shazman grama? What's the reason that a woman is obligated in the chiyuv? Okay? So anybody know what the Gemara says? It's not maybe what one would have thought of. What's the reason that a woman is chayiv in the mitzvah of achilas matzah? Anybody remember? So what would you have thought? Right. If somebody stopped you on the street, yeah. Right. So you would have thought that. But we actually don't say that, right? The question is, why not? Why can't we just say, well, women were had a part of the geula, or they brought about the geula? So the question is, why would we not say that? And this is like a big discussion in Tosfos and Iran. But the Gemara gives a different reason. The Gemara says, "V'hashta di israbu lahu b'val teoch chametz." Now that we know that a woman is obligated to not eat chametz, she's not allowed to eat chametz. Isrami nami lachilas matzah, because she can't eat chametz. Therefore, we know that she has to eat matzah because the two are connected. So, Kerebi Eliezer, the Amor Eliezer, Noshim Chayavos Bachilas Matzah, Dvar Torah, Shenemar Lotochal of Chametz, who can't eat Chametz, Kol Sheyeshu without Techo Chametz, Yeshu Bachilas Matzah. Okay? Anybody where there's a prohibition, they can't eat Chametz, those people are Chayiv to eat Matzah, Vahani Noshi, Nami Ho, Vyeshu without Techo Chametz, Yeshu Mekumachu Matzah. Therefore, they have to eat Matzah because they are not allowed to eat Chametz. Again, the connection between these two. Okay. Lastly, and there's many other sort of connections as well, let's just see the Shita of the Vilna Gaon. So the Vilna Gaon says, Shivas Yomim Tocha Matzah. Does anybody know, before we see this inside, there's a famous Shita of the Vilna Gaon in regards to Achilas Matzah. Anybody know what that is? Something that, even once I say it, then it might sound familiar to some of you. So he says the following. So Shivas Yomim Tocha Matzos, Kol Shiva Mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to eat matzah all 7 days. Ve'eino kore la rishus ela legabe laila rishona. Why do some people say that to eat matzah all 7 days is a rishus? Because it's not on the same level as the first night. The first night is a chova. Wherever you're going next Friday night, it's an obligation. But every other day of Pesach is a mitzvah. I mean, it's a mitzvah to go ahead and to eat matzah for all 7 days or 8 days, depending on where you live. Okay? And this is Afa Pichein, mitzvah midoraisahu. It's a mitzvah to eat matzah every single day of Pesach. Now, out of curiosity, is that the way that we hold, that every single day it's a mitzvah to eat matzah? Okay? So Juliana says, Juliana's usually right with most things. So Juliana says, no, it's not a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah the first night. And if you're a type of person who just, you don't like eating matzah, so the rest of the time eat, I don't know, fill in the blank. Whatever it is that you want to eat. It used to be when I was a kid, then like there was like nothing to eat. You know, like matzah brei and a little bit of this and like the Barton's chocolate lollipops. And now it's like the best food is like the Pesach food and the... Okay, so, but you don't have to eat matzah. But the Vilna Gaon says, no. It is an absolute mitzvah to eat matzah every single day. And that is chal for a woman, that's chal for a man, it's chal for everybody. You have to eat matzah every single day. And if you continue in the Master Rav, so he says at the end... let's take a look, by the way. He was so crazy about this mitzvah. Take a look at the last three lines. Okay. Ubemotze Yantiv, the last day of Yantiv, Hayim Yishadel Litom Chametz. He would make sure, actually, it says before, that he had three meals on the last day of Pesach because he wanted to eat matzah for three meals. So he had Shalosh Shudis. And then, like, as Pesach was ending, he would just, like, taste a little bit to sort of leave the taste in his mouth. And then... he wouldn't have it the rest of the year. Here, like eating matzah a good part of the year, like the thin, like shmur matzah. The Vilna Gaon says, I can't do that. I need to eat it just for these days. It's a mitzvah. I want to enjoy it. I want to be excited about it. Okay, and the chol zman hekeira, this is the bottom line. Okay, so according to the Vilna Gaon, it's a mitzvah to eat matzah every single day. Now, because they may have a question on that Vilna Gaon. Anybody know what a question might be on that Vilna Gaon? Okay? So assuming we say that it's a mitzvah to eat a matzah every single day, so why then does a person not say a bracha when they eat matzah kol shiva? Let's say sitting in the sukkah, right? All of us here, most of us here are Ashkenazi Jews, okay? So therefore, if you sit in the sukkah any day of sukkahs, you would say a bracha, okay? So why is it, according to the Vilna Gaon, it's a mitzvah to eat matzah every single day, but I only say the bracha of al chilas matzah on the first night or the first two nights. So why should that be the case? If it is in fact a mitzvah, so why not say it every single day? Okay? Anybody have a teretz for that question? If it is a mitzvah to eat matzah every day, so why then should we not be mechayev saying a bracha? Anybody have any thoughts or question? Gotcha? Yeah. No? Well, what was that? Yeah, but hamotzi is not a birchas mitzvah, right? Hamotzi is you saying on the bread. It's like a birchas nenin. It's bracha you say for enjoyment. It's not a birchas mitzvah. I mean, like, the comparable would be sitting in a sukkah. You would say hamotzi, and you'd also say leishiv a sukkah, right? You'd say the bracha on the mitzvah of sukkah. Here you're not saying the bracha on the mitzvah of matzah, yeah?
I was going to say maybe it's a mitzvah for all 7 days. Maybe, like, if you miss a day, it's not like each of right. The 7 days.
Could be. Maybe it's like a mitzvah for an entire chag as opposed to every single piece of matzah that you have. That could definitely be an answer. In fact, that's something that people suggest. What some people suggest is that when you eat matzah for all 7 days, it's not really, this is my Rebbe Rav Rosenzweig mentioned many, many years ago, back in 1993, which makes me feel old when I say that. But so it's not really a mitzvah to eat the matzah. You're eating the matzah as a way of like rejecting chametz, right? It's a way of saying we're not eating chametz, we're rejecting chametz, we're sort of getting rid of chametz, right? So the eating of the matzah was not because there's like a mitzvah per se in achilas matzah, it's because the matzah is coming as like a rejection of achilas chametz. So again, that's another example of matzah sort of coming as a rejection to chametz. Matzah is made from the same ingredients. Women are chayv in matzah because they can't eat chametz. Eating matzah all 7 days is a way of rejecting chametz. Okay, and the question is, sort of flipping over to page number two, so why exactly is that the case? What's this idea about matzah being a rejection of chametz? So I imagine that every person here has some sense of what I'm going to mention in a second. And it's really based on a very famous Radvaz that I didn't photocopy. But the Ravaz comments on this Rambam, we're going to read and many others as well. The Rambam says, Chametz shenis arev bedavar acher toch ha-pesach, right? Chametz that, what's this case? Chametz shenis arev bedavar acher toch ha-pesach. Ven Bimino, Bet Shlo Bimino. What's the famous case of? Anybody? Any of the brewery contingent on the couch want to? So this is talking about a case of a taroves. Person A drops something into some mixture. I don't know who's the person who plans on perhaps getting quickly divorced, who has the chametz around the house to drop into the soup in the first place. But let's say you would have that circumstance where, and I've been in the Ravanas for 17, 18 years, every question is always, well, my husband did X, Y, and Z. That's always like, my husband took this spoon and then did this and did that, and And I'm not sure if it's really true or that's sort of like the cover that people give, you know. So let's say, again, somebody's husband or somebody's brother or somebody's father dropped some chametz into a mixture of non-chametz food. So normally we have the principle called, right, what's the normal principle we have? Jennifer, what was that? You said, either like batel b'shishim or batel b'rov. Either it's negated in a mixture and in liquid. Okay, but by Pesach, of course, is not the case, right? Ben b'mino, ben shalom b'mino. Hariz ha'ozer b'chol shehu. The smallest drop of entomid donor that falls into a mixture, so the whole pot is now not good anymore. So why is there no bittel? Why is the chametz not negated? So the famous answer that the Radvaz gives, you know, the Radvaz says, like this, like the answer maybe kids hear about in high school, or he says that like the chametz is like what? The chametz is like a yetzahara, okay, and that is never bata, right? That's not something that can be negated in a mixture. I mean, chametz is not just chametz. It's not just a piece of food. It's not just like an innocent piece of chicken that fell into like a pot of chicken soup, but it's a lot more than that in a hashkafic sense. And therefore, because it represents something sort of more insidious, so therefore it's not batel. Now, where's the Ravaz getting that from? Okay, so the Ravaz bases himself on this very famous Gemara in Brachos, on Daf Yud Zayin Mabez, which is the next Mar Makom. Rabbi Alexandri, anybody knows anything about this name, Rabbi Alexandri, just on a historical note? Any people with historical interests here? What type of name is Rabbi Alexandri? What's that? Yeah, it's a Greek name. And if you go through the Gemara, it's very, very clear. Almost every few daf, you find a name that clearly is not a Jewish name, right? Pappus, Rav Todos, Rav Alexandri. And there's actually a question brought down for those of you who have secular names, which are many of you. Are you allowed to like use your secular name? And one of the proofs brought down by Rav Moshe Feinstein was, if you open the Gemara, Rabbi Alexandri is not a Jewish name. It's a Greek name that people just adopted. So if you want to name your kids, you know, Bill or Tom or, you know, I don't know if there's any Bills anymore, but whatever you want to name them. So that's no different than Rabbi Alexandri. I do sometimes wonder, this is a separate note. Sometimes we have kids in our shul that name like Matthew. That's already like a different, if there's any Matthews here or, you know, brothers of Matthew, but certain names obviously are not just secular. They're sort of Christian in nature. But anyway, so Rabbi Alexandri, Basar Dematzli, after he davened, Rabbi Alexandri said, So Amar Hachi, Ribona Olamim, Galoi V'Adua Lefanecha, it is known, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Sheritzoneinu Lasos Ritzoncha, you know that we want to fulfill your will, Umi Ma'akev, what's stopping us from doing your will? Why can't we fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your Ratzon more so? So Or Shebe'isa, Vishiba Malchius. What's stopping us from fulfilling Hashbarakhu your ratzon? What's the Orsha Beisa? Chametz, right? We want to do everything, we want to do your will, but the chametz is stopping us. And also Shiba Malchius, the fact that we are living under foreign rule. Yehiratz mufanecha shetatzileinu miyadam, v'nashuv la'asos chukei ritzonam b'leivav shalem. So the Gemara is telling us that in this tefillah, we say that it's the chametz, it's the Sor Shebeisa that's stopping us from doing your will. What does that mean? So if you see Rashi in the Gemara, beautiful Rashi, Sor Shebeisa, Yetzahara Shebelveinu, right, Hamach Mitzeinu. The Yetzahara that's in our hearts, Hamach Mitzeinu. Now, anybody want to maybe sort of explain this the way that you think what Rashi is saying? What does it mean, Yetzahara Shebelveinu? Shemach mitzenu. How does a person sort of define those words or think about those words? What's sort of stopping us from doing your will? What does that mean? Yetzahara shelibenu hamach mitzenu. How does we sort of understand those words? So, I think we understand what it means. But let's take a look at this Maharsha, who explains sort of this Gemara. So Gemara says, Umi ba'akev, soor shebi'isa. Hakavana bezek, moshekosav harambam, like the meaning of this Gemara is like what the Rambam said, B'shmona Prakim, Sheyesh lo Adam Leilech b'midosav u'b'ma'asav b'derech hamitzua. What does that mean? What's he referring to, the Rambam? He's referring to what? Yeah, Shvil HaZahav. We should just walk in a way where we're just straight. We're just yashar. We're not expanded. We're not too cheap. We're not too overly this. We're not too that. We're not overexpanding ourselves. We're not constantly frustrated. We're not always annoyed. We're not just... We're staying in a somewhat sort of clean, yashar space. And by the way, the Rambam says that a person who does that without extravagances and without sort of sharp edges, that's the way a person fulfills v'alach t'bedrachav, staying just like pashut, right? Having that pashtus. V'hinei ha-yetzahara, mesis, whatever the yetzahara, the impulses, the needs, the instincts, the impulses that have run awry, mesis she'yelach ha-adam b'katzeh ha-echad, we become too much of something, right? B'moser lo, k'gon lehiska'os, will he tnaheg, b'moser ha-taiva, person that thinks too much of themselves, a person who has outsized expectations, a person that is too needy, a person that is too frustrated, right? V'yal korchach medam leilis orsha b'isa. Anybody here make challah? Anybody? So if I can say with a source of pride, seeing that maybe you know my daughter, she's a great challah maker, right? But if you see everybody make challah on an Erev Shabbos, it's like an old horror movie, right? What's the old horror movie? It's like you put the dough in, then you put the yeast in, you put the towels over it, you come back 5 hours later, it's like, you know, it can't just sort of stay pashut. It's like taking up all the oxygen and all the space. And that's exactly what the Maharshal is describing, and that's what Rashi means, right? Yetzahar shemlibeinu shemach mitzeinu. It makes us divert from a path of simplicity and pashtus and healthy interactions and a healthy life. And okay, so how does all this get back to chametz and matzah? So clearly what matzah is, and just let's see this last sort of marmakim on this topic. So v'chol dor v'dor chayiv adam l'haros es atzmo, kehilu hu ba'atzmo yotza ato mishibud mitzrayim. This is the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz Matzah. Every generation, a person has to see themselves as though they went out of Mitzrayim. Now, there's two points in this Rambam that are minor, but absolutely significant. They're chidushim. They changed the whole sort of feeling of the Pesach experience. What are the two words that the Rambam, or even like letters the Rambam uses to sort of change the feeling of this very well-known Mishnah? Okay, anybody know? What does the Rambam say here? One of which he throws in altogether, and one of which he sort of slightly changes. What's that? What is that? Okay. Sort of, yeah. So the two things the Rambam changes, a little bit of atzmo. The first is that, b'chol dor v'dor chayiv adam, what's the version in the Haggadah that we have? L'har os es atzmo. You have to sort of demonstrate freedom. It's not just to see oneself, but to demonstrate oneself. People maybe know the old Moroccan customs of walking around the table, right, with like, bags over one's shoulders. It's l'har os es atzmo, to show oneself. And then the second piece is, very subtle, but very beautiful, right? Hu ba'atzmo yotza ata mishibud Mitzrayim. As though, like, right now, ata, right now, I'm experiencing a certain level of chayrus. Now, what does it mean to experience a certain level of chayrus ata, like, right now, okay? So let's just take, for example, imagine most of you would be spending, in some capacity or other, yontiv with family members. Now, I would imagine, I know many of your families, that all of your families are, you know, just the model of shalom, b'shalva, everyone's sort of respecting each other, nobody's getting on anybody's nerves, nobody is this, nobody's giving each other's looks, no one is like grinding inside of, oh gosh, this person doesn't, you know, shut up in 2 seconds. So I imagine your family, now that goes on, and our family might be a little bit different, right, where there are people, I guess you would say, who like trigger other people, so to speak, is that the right word? I don't know if any of you are ever triggered by family, but if you are, you know what I'm speaking about, okay? And you're sitting there filled with resentments, you know, and anger, and negativity, and intolerance, and frustration, and maybe things from one's past are also being triggered, and maybe there's a feeling of certain siblings, sort of, you know, all the various things that can happen in the sort of the messiness of family. there's very little freedom in that, right? There's very little freedom because we're not like at peace, right? So what matzah is as a rejection of chametz, you know, chametz is sort of this expansion. I'm too needy, I'm too resentful, I have too many old resentments, I'm too easily frustrated, I have too many jealousies, there's too many feelings of inadequacy. Chametz is all of that. It's us sort of expanding, taking sort of natural impulses, expanding in a way that doesn't really allow us freedom. Because as long as we feel all of that, there's very little freedom. We're constantly sort of in a place of inner tension. Matzah, sort of the simplicity, getting back to sort of like a simple, just pashtus, right? And then freedom is really much more about, you know, I'm free or I'm not free. You know, I'm in the Soviet Union, I'm not in the Soviet Union, right? I can vote, I can't vote. It's about sort of all of that inner stuff that allows Hil Hu Yotza Ato Mishibud Mitzrayim. Chametz represents the lack of freedom. Matzah represents the ability to deal with all sometimes of the sort of the toxicity and that stuff inside of us that takes away from genuine freedom. I do want to say just, this is not at all Derech Musar, but it's maybe more as far as sadness. There are people in their life, again, like I think people here are very much like on a growth trajectory, but the people in their life, they never deal with those things. You know, they're 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. They're still not comfortable with themselves. They're still not comfortable with who they are. They're still looking at somebody else. There's all of that just stuff. The sore, the shebe'isa, the yetzer hara shebe'eino shemakom yitzeinu. Okay, and again, that's sort of one idea of freedom. Now, there's another idea of freedom I just want to mention, and I think this probably is apropos to especially people your age. The Rambam has a Haggadah. For those of you, by the way, who either have brothers or, in certain cases, husbands who are Tamidim or Rosenzweig, it's like once you're a Rosenzweig at a certain amount, like you've, you know, your life becomes, you know, my wife or my kids or my siblings, my parents, and the Rambam. Those are like the people, maybe not even in that order. Like the Rambam sort of like, and all sort of comes from a, am I overstating that or no? You know? And it all comes from, again, sort of back in the times of like of Rav Soloveitchik and the Briskers, and the sort of the diuk or the carefulness in the language of the Rambam is something which is very much of like a staple of what a base medrash is. Okay, so if you look in the Rambam in his Haggadah, which comes at the end of the laws of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, so the Rambam throws in his Nusach Haggadah something obviously that's very foreign to us. And that is Bebehilu Yatzanu Mitzrayim. What do those words mean? Bebehilu Yatzanu Mitzrayim means, was that? Yeah, like with haste. And then Halach Ma'anya, the Achlo V'san Abayar the Mitzrayim. I mean, that's like the Rambam's Haggadah. The Rambam's Haggadah is that we left in a rush, Halach Ma'anya. Okay? Now, part of the idea of Chametz Matzah that the Baalei Musar discuss is the very idea of like alacrity. It's the very idea that when sort of the moment is there to seize that moment, right, there's not sort of like a hesitation and there is like a carefulness. The very idea of ushmartim as hamatzos, sort of the sense of like, you know, the 18 minutes and not a second more and not a second less, you know, meaning that when we have this national exodus, that's done by behilo. It's done by seizing that moment. We're not waiting another day, we're not waiting another week, with all of the fears, with all of the unknown, bebehilo, right? Chametz is something that we allow to sort of sit and saunter and rise and become engorged and sort of almost like a laziness. And matzah is the opposite. It's really sort of the alacrity. So listen to this beautiful comment by Rav Tzadok. Rav Tzadok is so amazing. I personally loved Tzvikas HaTzadik, which is really his classic Sefer. If people find themselves having some time to learn and they want to have a Chavrusa, it's such an amazing Sefer. Very difficult in parts, but something which is so meaningful. So Rav Tzadok says, so Reishis Kenisas HaAdam Lavodas Hashem, so Tzarech Lios B'Chipazon Kemosha Matzinu B'Pesach Mitzrayim Shehayanecha B'Chipazon Below Pesach Doros, right? That first year, the Pesach Mitzrayim, it was done b'chipazon. It was done quickly, stealthily, with alacrity. And the Rasadut says, Reishis Kenisas Ha'adam Levodas Hashem, when we first enter into any new sort of spiritual domain, right? It has to be done by almost like jumping in. So you know what? I'm making this commitment, okay? And I'm committing myself to X. and I think this is a great idea, and I'm just going to go ahead and to do it. B'mnei shehaschala l'natek atzmo mikol taivas olam hazem shehu mekushar bahem. A person is so sort of connected to this world, sometimes tzarech lishmor harega shemisorer boratzon Hashem v'lachapos ha'osa rega. Sometimes you sort of have like seize a moment. You know, I'm inspired to do something, and it has to be thoughtful. I can't necessarily always just like be impulsive, and it has to be something which is baba cheshbon. But sometimes it's just, you know what, like, this is really meaningful, and I want to go ahead and do it. And then afterwards, okay, and then he says, v'acharkach, right, shuv yelach b'metinos v'la'at k'din pesach doros. Then afterwards you say, you know what, let me take things piece by piece. But sometimes a person says, I want to take on a new mitzvah, or a new chavrusa, or a new this, or a new that, a new opportunity. So if you sit around waiting too long, it makes sense, it doesn't make sense, it's this, it's that, everything works out, it'll never happen. Sometimes you say, you know what, I'm moved by it, let me do it, and then as time goes on, and that's also a little of the idea. Matzah sometimes is sort of seizing a meaningful moment, chametz is sort of allowing that moment to pass. Okay, these are two examples, I don't want to speak for too long, just a few minutes longer, two examples of the dynamic between chametz and matzah in regards to freedom. Okay, number one, chametz representing the impulse which has sort of gotten out of control, which has expanded too far. Matzah, again, is the control of that. It's the simplicity. Number two, sometimes sort of in spiritual areas to sort of almost like the paradigm of matzah, of sort of the quickness, of decisiveness, as opposed to just, you know, allowing things to go on and go on and go on and to sort of do nothing. But what's even more fascinating is that within matzah itself, right, this is the dynamic between chametz and matzah. Two different objects, two opposite objects, one object sort of feeding off of the other one, rejecting the other one. What's even more fascinating is that within matzah itself, there is a certain quagmire within matzah, right? My wife and I have always had a debate over the years, and it's not atypical of differences of our personalities, of how we feel about Bill Clinton, right? Now, Bill Clinton is a little bit before your time, but I was like, he's a disgusting, he's a pig, he's a this, he's a that, you know? And I'm like, no, he's a good guy, and he really cared about this, and he's a generous person, he's helped a lot of people. And she's like, well, how does a good person and a generous person, you know, also do the things which, obviously we know that, wait, some Bill Clinton fans in the back of the room? No. How do you say a person's a great guy and also be something of like a little bit of a, I mean, low life may be too strong of a word. In other words, can two things sort of exist in one space? Or sometimes is something either yes and no and black and white? And my feeling always is that, yeah, there's a certain areas of gray and duality in people, and people can be a lot of things at once. Objects can be a lot of things at once. And my wife, even her credit, says, no, there's a certain black and white morality in the world, as opposed to sort of always these shades of gray. Now, why do I say that? Because take a look at the pasuk in source number 11, Lo socho lav chametz, this is a pasuk that obviously is well known to all of you, you can't eat chametz, shivas yamim, tocha olav matzos lachamoni, you have to eat matzah for 7 days, the lechemoni, ki b'chibazon yotzasim eretz Yisrayim, l'man tiskor es yom tzeskom eretz Yisrayim koi mechayecha. Right? You have to eat matzah, lechemoni. And by the way, this is the only place in the Torah where this term is used, lechemoni. Right? This is the only pasuk where that's used. Now, let me ask you a question. You're all a well-educated audience. What does the word lechemoni mean? Bread of what?
Poor.
Okay? Anybody have a different opinion besides poor? Sean, what do you say?
Affliction.
That's sort of the same category of poor, affliction. You know, that's like a fancier word. So take a look at the Gemara in Pesachim, because Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Lechem Oni Ksiv, right? It says Oni with a Vav, right? Okay? Sha'onin Alav Dvarim. This is the bread in which we speak about the Geula. This is the bread of redemption. This is the bread upon which we speak about the Exodus, okay? Tani Nam Yehachu, we have a similar braisa. Lechem Oni, Lechem She'onin Alav Dvarim Harbe. This is the bread of Geula, the bread in which we speak about all these positive things. It is the ultimate paradigm of freedom, okay? And then the other opinion is Lechem Oni, so Dover Acher, another opinion, Lechem Oni, Oni Ksiv, right? just like Jessica said, Shoshana says, Ma ani shadarcha b'prusa, afkan b'prusa. Just like an ani eats a little scrap of bread that he maybe finds on the street, or somebody gives him a leftover roll, so too afkan b'prusa as well. So what does lachem oni mean? It's a bread of geula, and it's also a bread of anius. It's a bread of poverty. And throughout the evening, when we speak about the mitzvah of matzah, the Mefarshim, they all discuss, but which matzah are we talking about? Which lechem oni are we talking about? Are we speaking about the lechem oni of poverty? Or are we speaking about the lechem oni of geula? So for instance, if you look in the Haggadah, halach ma'anyad yachal avasana bi'arad Mitzrayim. Okay, by the way, anybody know, again, historically, when was this written, this piece of the Haggadah? Anybody know sort of when this was written? How long ago? When did people start saying this? Anybody want to venture a guess? I'll just mention that when I first started teaching, I was Bavel, exactly, right. So I once asked, this just as an aside, so I was teaching a ninth grade class, this was not in Buria, and I mentioned the Rambam, and I said, okay, girls, where's the Rambam from? Anybody know where Rambam's from? And the girls are not saying anything. I'm like, anybody, you know, somebody, you know, anybody know where the Rambam's from? You're trying to engage people. So a girl raised their hand, and she said, Brooklyn? I'm like, well, Brooklyn is, you know, at that point, you're like, well, Brooklyn's close, but it's not exactly right. And a little bit earlier than when Brooklyn was settled. So you're never sure exactly what answer you're going to get. But Bavel was the right answer. It was written after Chorban Bayis Rishon. It was written well over 2,000 years ago as we came to Bavel, when we came to Exodus. So halach ma'anyad yachalu avasana bi'arad Mitzrayim. This bread of lechem oni that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. Okay. Now what does it mean that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim? So this machlokes Rishonim, which I did not include, is this speaking about the bread of anius that they had to eat, right? Or is this speaking about the bread that was eaten with the Karban Pesach, the bread of geula? So even when we say those words, right, diachalu avasada be'ar Mitzrayim, are we referring to the bread of affliction or referring to the bread of geula? Which one? Okay. And furthermore, let's take a look at quickly at the Torah. Maybe flip over to the next page. So it says, v'yitol yadav, you wash your hands, v'yikach haka'ara shahamitzra hamatzos besocha, you take up the plate with the matzos, k'seder shahinicho hashlema l'malo v'aprusa takteha, you have the full matzah, then you have the piece of the matzah, v'yivarch al hashlema hamotzi, you say the bracha of hamotzach minar, it's on the full one, okay? And v'lo yochal achi yivarch al haprusa al achilas matzah. And then the actual mitzvah of matzah is done on the what? On the prusa? On the broken piece, on the piece of poverty, right? So according to this first opinion of the Torah, the mitzvah of matzah is the mitzvah on the lechem oni of what? Of poverty, okay? But if you then continue in the next line in the Torah, if you go to the next line, okay? Umivnei sheyesh mi she'omer shemivarech al haprusa hamotzi v'al hashlema al achilas matzah. So you take up the two top matzahs together. What does that opinion say, the Torah? That the mitzvah of matzah is not on the broken piece, the piece of poverty, but is on the full piece, right? The shleimusa. It's on the piece of geula. It's on the whole piece. It's on the beautiful piece, right? So that's even a question that we showed him. When we speak about this mitzvah of matzah, is it the broken? Is it the whole? Which one is it exactly? And this, we see this machlokas in many different places. Now, anybody have a question about this? It may not be an obvious question. It may be something that to you, the answer is obvious. Okay? But we say that the geula is represented by the matzah, okay? And the anius is represented by the matzah as well. Anybody have a question on sort of that duality, so to speak? It's two opposite things being represented by one chetza, right? Wouldn't you think that in theory, if you were HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you were a chazal, so then you would have, you know, think about it in your own life, right? In your own life, you know, this piece of clothing probably represents what you want to put on when you're, like, depressed and lying in bed. So we'll put on, like, those sweatpants. And this guy we put on when we go meet, you know, future mother-in-law, and this is what we're going to do this. And then when I'm feeling great, I do that. When I don't feel great, like, and so if you think about the totality of Yadus, different symbols mean, you know, very, very sort of different things, right? But here we have the absolute opposite experiences of Lechem Oni and Lechem Shogula all represented in one Chetza. The question is, you know, why should that be the case, right? Why should that be the case? Okay, furthermore, take a look at the next Mar Makom, and again, we're wrapping up. I know that all of you are in school or you work, and the hour is, you're probably all at a stage of life where 9:15 feels like 2 in the morning. So I so appreciate everyone being here and putting in the effort to learn. So in the Haggadah of the Nesivos, he lists a lot of questions. I want you to see a few of them. This tefillah of Halach Ma'anya, or this part of the Haggadah, let's see the number base. Lama Tiknu Hakruz Kol Dichvin Yesev Yechal Shehu La'aniyim Dafka, right, B'chag HaPesach. Why don't we do this every holiday, right? Why don't we go out on Sukkot? It would make even more sense, especially if you're in Shalayim. You can, like, go out of your Sukkah and, or Brooklyn or somewhere and start yelling, whoever needs a place. You know, why do we only have that by Pesach? If you look at Gimel, HaKruz HaZeh HaYeroi L'yos B'chutz, right? L'nei HaPesach? Whatever. You should really say this outside of your door. Sheyishmu aniim v'yavolo v'bayis akashik v'rasagar Pesach. Why are you saying everyone should come in and join us? Your door is locked. If anybody came to your door, you'd throw them out. You know, so like, the whole thing's like a joke. If you really want to invite people over to your house, so go outside and stand by in the street. It's like, you know, something that happened like in Eretz Yisrael. Tell people, oh yeah, you come in and plenty of room for everybody who wants to join us. And then, you know, Dalid, lama karu lechem oni, why is it called lechem oni? Why do we only have this once we go into Bavel? How do we sort of explain all of those ideas? Okay, so I saw a beautiful idea in the Haggadah of Rabbi Sacks. I'm not sure how relevant it is to everybody here, but I think it's, to me, this is a beautiful idea. So Rabbi Sacks speaks about the fact that real freedom, I mean, chofshi means like to be physically free. Right? Becheris means a certain emotional, psychological, sort of spiritual freedom. And that only comes about when a person is really sort of like in a giving type of mindset, right? And the transition between lechem oni, as far as being the bread of poverty, the bread of sort of selfishness, I'll take mine, right, and you worry about yours, to the lechem geula is halach manya, right? Is a statement of, right, people, if they want to join us, they can join us. There's an openness of our family. There's an openness of our life, right? That transforms the experience of sort of my own sort of selfish life, sort of the life of Oni, the life of poverty, to a life of Cheirus. Listen to this beautiful story that he mentions. So Primo Levi, who wrote in his book, If This Is a Man, he describes his experiences, okay? And according to Primo Levi, the worst time of all was when the Nazis left in January 1945, and the Russians were advancing. All the prisoners who could walk were taken on the brutal death marches. The only people left in the camp were those too ill to move. For 10 days, they were left alone with only scraps of food and fuel. By the way, anybody read recently the book Night by Elie Wiesel? It's really like a must read. And one of the most, like, just horrific, horrific, horrific parts about that book. Anybody remember? If you've read it recently, Jared, was it?
On the train car?
On the train car, where a kid killed his father for like a scrap of bread, right? It's unbelievable. But that's like agnios. That's like the depths of like servitude. That's the depths of like poverty, right? So he describes when the broken window was repaired and the stove began to spread its heat. This was like in the camps after the Nazis had left. Something seemed to relax in everyone. And at that moment, the person, Towarowski, his name was, proposed to the others that each of them, everyone had like a slice of bread, offer a slice of bread to us three who had been working, fixing the window of the barracks in Auschwitz after the Germans left, and so it was agreed. Only a day before, a similar event would have been inconceivable. The law of the concentration camp said, eat your own bread, and if you can, eat the bread of your neighbor as well, and left no room for gratitude, no room for sharing, no room for being magnanimous. It really meant that the law of the concentration camp was dead with that gesture of generosity. It was the first human gesture that occurred among us. I believe that that moment can be dated as the beginnings of the change by which we who had not died slowly changed from prisoners to men again. And that's what halachmania is. Halachmania is taking the bread, which was lechem oni, lechem of poverty, lechem of each man for themselves, lechem of selfishness, lechem of smallness of mind, to lechem shagula. And that doesn't have to be announced out on the street. It doesn't have to be said publicly. It doesn't have to be said, right, on every holiday. It's said dafka now as a statement of the fundamental nature of our lives is that of chayrus, connection, freedom, and that freedom is expressed specifically through the ability to really see another person. I think the truth is, I think for all of us, you know, the chagim are times where generosity, sort of that spirit, can very much be on display, right? You know, people come into their homes and it's like, okay, you know, what do you need me to do? Or like, wow, I have such a sense of gratitude of being at home, and I have such a sense of gratitude towards, you know, my parents, and I really want to connect with my siblings, and I want to, I mean, it's a whole spirit of sort of what I have, I want to sort of give to you, and I want to share with you, and I want to enhance your life. And that's sort of dafka taking the bread that maybe 5 minutes ago was the bread of poverty, transforming that into the bread of geula, specifically the same chepza, specifically the same object. Now, I want to just mention one last mar makom. I'm really on the same topic. And again, going back to the question I mentioned a second ago, why is it that the same, and I hope this is a clear idea, the same chetza, the same object that was representing, that demonstrated poverty, is now used to demonstrate geula? Okay, I think it's a very, very, very important question because it extends well beyond just the parameters of chametz and matzah. So to answer that, I want you to think about another question, a question that I'm sure is very well known to all of you. And that's a question as to why it is that the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael is the mitzvah, of course, of Kiddush HaChodesh, okay? So listen to this beautiful Kedushas Levi. One of my favorite ideas in Kedushas Levi, and for those of you who are fans of Kedushas Levi, it's like almost every page you read, you're like, okay, this is my new favorite idea of Kedushas Levi. He writes so beautifully and so meaningfully and in such a positive way, with such optimism and joy and beauty. So he speaks, let's read the first couple lines and then we'll skip down. Okay, O Yevuar, I'll give you another pshat. HaChodesh hazeh lochem, Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon hu lochem l'chodshei hashana, ki omer rabbeinu shetzarech lemor mekadesh ha-shabbos v'Yisrael v'Rosh Chodesh, ki Rosh Chodesh Yisrael mekadshin lei, Rosh Chodesh v'nei Yisrael, of course, were mekadesh, they sanctified, aval Shabbos k'vi v'kaima. Okay? V'yadu ha-mamar chachmei Yisrael l'vracha, shekol ha-dvarim ha-shaychim la-chodesh, Tuluyim b'Yisrael. The Bnei Yisrael were the ones who impacted, of course, when Rosh Chodesh is. And because they impacted when Rosh Chodesh is, that means they also impacted when what? When Rosh Hashanah is. And they impacted when one should eat matzah, night in chametz. And they impacted when Yom Kippur is, right? It was Tuluy b'Yad. It was dependent on the hands of Klal Yisrael to essentially establish the entire calendar and the entire sort of halachic norm, so to speak, okay? And that's what it means, skipping down to the underlined parts, v'zehu, and that's what it means, rishon hu lachem. The first will be given to you. What does the first mean? Rishon hu lachem? What does the pasuk mean? What's the pashtus? The first is given to you? Speaking about the first month. That's the simple idea. But the Kedushas Levi says more than that. He says, Rishon hu merumaz alav yizborach shimo ki hu rishon lachem. What does rishon hu lachem means? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the rishon, is now given to you. Right? God is now given to the Jewish people. Hainu shehashem yizborach hu shenikra rishon hu lachem. God, who is called the rishon, is now given to you. Ki bezeh hachodesh maser liyisrael lekadesh oso bizman sheyirtzu. Bnei Yisrael can be Mekadesh the month when they saw fit. B'zeh ro'im sha'afilu Hashem yizborach v'yachol. It's as though God himself, b'chvodo v'atzmo, hu lochem. Ki b'yedchem, because it's in your hands, l'hanhig hanhagaso k'vi ritzonchem. You're being sort of manhig HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on when you decide to be Mekadesh v'chodesh. That is an amazing, amazing idea. It's actually saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like sort of there, like under the will of the Jewish people. We are called Tuluyim Kifi Hazman She Yisrael Mekadshin HaKodesh Kein Hu Yisbarach Mani Kanagoso Mishvato Kanau. Now, what does it mean? As we finish in a minute. So why then is the first mitzvah the mitzvah of Kodesh HaKodesh? Can you imagine anything more impactful than a nation of people who were so entrenched in a mentality of slavery? Everybody knows the famous Ibn Ezra, Parshas B'Shalach. They came to Yamsuf. They couldn't fight against their oppressors. They viewed themselves as just avadim. People know that when they liberated the concentration camps, so people just, they couldn't walk. They couldn't move. They were just so, the life was taken out of them. They saw themselves as avadim. And all of the mitzvos of Pesach is to sort of reject that slave mentality. Can you imagine anything more impactful than for that same nation to experience Kiddush HaChodesh, Rishon Hu Lachem, the same nation that viewed themselves in the same inadequate, diminished, slave-like way, to now be told, Rishon Hu Lachem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a loving father, is given over to you, and that you're Mekadosh HaChodesh, you're Mekadosh Dizman, anything that shows the trajectory of a personal and a national geula more than that mitzvah. So I think by the same token, the very fact, and I'm sorry, so what I mean to say is the following, that Kiddush HaChodesh was almost a way of like rewriting the narrative of Klal Yisrael. You know, the narrative of Klal Yisrael was that of avdus, was that of shiflus, was that of self-diminishment, right? Kiddush HaChodesh is a rewriting of that. No. You're more than that. You're not defined by slavery. You're defined by sort of the greatness of man and the greatness of Klal Yisrael. And there's no mitzvah that demonstrated that more. By the same token, when we think about matzah as well, it's specifically the same nation who experienced Lechem Oni, the Lechem Shel Aniyus. That same nation, that same trajectory, experienced the Lechem Shel Geula. Right? It's almost like that Geula specifically came through having those moments of self-diminishment, those moments of self-doubt, those moments of Aniyus. The Lechem Shel Geula is like a rewriting of that. It's like writing like a new chapter in the life of Klal Yisrael. And to some degree, when we think about sort of the building of Eretz Yisrael, we think about 1948. I mean, those themes of that the Maharal often speaks about, sort of slavery, servitude, diminishment, right? That's the very geula in Eretz Yisrael. That's the very redemption in Eretz Yisrael. It's all sort of part of a person's narrative. It's all part of a person's trajectory. In a way, that's really the geula that the Rambam, to some degree, maybe refers to as the Yatsa Ata Mishiba Mitzrayim. As long as a person feels for themselves defined in a negative way by their life and by their history and by their past. Right? Do you know what? I hope this does not apply to anybody here, anybody's family. Do you know people who are abused as children that 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, they're still sort of dealing with, and they're still just having to deal with those feelings of like a 12-year-old. And the feeling has to be then, through lots of help and through lots of therapy and through lots of support, no, like, you can write new chapters like in your life. I mean, we don't run from that, and we don't sort of deny that, and we don't reject that, we don't change our name, we say, you know what, there are chapters in which we take all of that, that somehow we transform everything in our life to beauty. And for all of us as well, when we look back on, for me, 47 years, for all of you, 20-something years, to look back on one's life, recognizing sort of those moments of anius, sort of the broken moments, the shivrei luchos pieces, the pieces of pain, the pieces of inadequacy, the pieces of maybe not always feeling at one with one's family, the pieces of maybe feeling socially not always I'm totally connected. To recognize that all becomes part of like the narrative of the Lechem Shel Geula, through sort of taking that entire experience. It's not a different chetza. It's not a different object. We take sort of the same object, but we transform it through our own avoda, through our own work, from the Lechem Shel Anius to the Lechem Shel Geula. And that is the ultimate freedom. You know, it's so beautiful, and I'll just conclude with this point. You know, if a person takes a look at the Halach Ma'anya, again, source number 13. So it says, Hashata Hacha, Lashana Haba B'Arad Yisrael, right? Hashata Avdei, Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin, right? What does it say? This year we are not in Israel, in the year to come we should be in Israel. This year we're slaves, in the year to come we're going to be B'nei Chorin. Now, what made the Mephoreshim point out, right, what should the order be? It should be that we're going to become free, and then we'll go to Eretz Yisrael. But that's not what the Baalei Haggadah say. They say, we can go to Eretz Yisrael, and we could still be enslaved, right? We could still be serving a slave mentality. We could still not have Cheirus, even in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why we say, even in Eretz Yisrael, Hashata Abdei, Lashon Abba B'nei Chorin, we want to have that freedom. And that freedom can come about, just going back to what we said again, the freedom of matzah in contradistinction or in contrast as a rejection of the Yetzihara, the impulses, the pieces of ourselves that are not whole, the pieces of ourselves that hold on to things in a negative way, the pieces of ourselves that expand beyond sort of healthy borders that don't really allow us to be free, and matzah, which is pashtus, is a rejection of that. Freedom that sometimes comes, as Rav Tzadok says, bebehilo. Sometimes saying, you know what? I'm just going to move forward. I'm going to make this career choice. And I'm going to make this relationship choice. Or maybe I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Or maybe whatever it is to sort of see sort of that moment, like in a carpe diem type of way. There's a freedom in that. That's matzah rejecting chametz. Maybe it's the freedom that comes from living a life, as Rabbi Sacks pointed out in the Haggadah, of moving from a limited, small mentality to an expanded mentality. Who can I give? Who can I bring positivity to? Who can I love? Who can I share with? That's the true sign of cheiros, the freedom of just wanting to expand and to give and to share and to connect. Or maybe it's the freedom of looking at all of our life and taking all of, sort of sometimes chapters, sometimes joyous, sometimes painful, sometimes challenging, sometimes broken, and making all of that part of the beautiful narrative of our lives. And I'm interested in all of us, myself and all of you, continue to experience that beautiful, beautiful inner freedom. You know, I was just sort of thinking a second ago as I'm saying that, I was thinking about Natan Sharansky. I'm sure all of you have heard about, or all of you know what Natan Sharansky is. You might read his book, Fear No Evil. It was an amazing, amazing book. And he was in jail for years, and he used to sit there playing sort of mental chess while he was in solitary confinement 23 hours a day. And he would play like these games for hours of like mental chess, him versus his alter ego. And he said it was a way of always making a statement of, like, I'm sitting here like in a jail cell, but my mind, my soul, my heart, my connection to my people, my connection to my family and to my wife, and like, that is as free as it ever was before. And all the deeper, profound, resonant messages of matzah and matzah and chametz all speaks to us about our own journey in freedom. Mirz Hashem, we can all experience our own personal geula and join together in the ultimate geula for all of Klal Yisrael. B'mehera v'yomeinu. Amen. Thank you again to Jessica and to all of you for being here, and look forward to learning together in the future.